Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie, senior reporter Mike Bond, and UFC 318 Fight Week is upon us, everyone. It is finally here, the last dance, the retirement of El Diamante, Dustin Poirier. It is all going down Saturday at Smoothie King Center in New Orleans. He faces Max Holloway for the third and final time, closing out their trilogy for the BMF strap. I am excited. I can't wait to be there. Going to have a great week of coverage ahead for MMA Junkie. I will be on the ground there. My first time in Louisiana, first time in New Orleans. And wow, what a time to travel there. It is going to be probably an emotional and amazing and hopefully a violent and brutal night between these two headliners. I was there for the last Poirier versus Holloway fight in Atlanta, cage side, one of the most unforgettable nights of my career. We'll never forget before the first horn sounded. Dustin Poirier, as Max Holloway is being introduced, looks through the cage, gives me a glare of death and just nods his head. And he's like, I'm going to beat this man tonight. And he's told me after the fact, he felt like he was going to be able to beat anyone on that night. One of the best he ever felt inside that octagon. And certainly will be trying to replicate that feeling as he goes into the farewell and tries to leave our sport of mixed martial arts on top. This is the main topic of this UFC 318 card. Of course, there's a few other fights of interest. Kevin Holland versus Daniel Rodriguez. Paulo Costa's back. Patricio Pitbull. Sophomore UFC appearance against Dan Ige. How will he fare there? A lot to kind of go over there, but today's show is all about the main event. It is all about Dustin Poirier, Max Holloway, previewing this BMF title fight. And our show today, once again, presented by the great people at mybookie.ag. Appreciate their support, and we will discuss a little bit more about the UFC 318 betting side on the program today. And joining us to preview UFC 318 and this main event, what a cast of characters. I can't wait. First up, we will have Poirier's longtime manager, associate, friend, Rob Rivetta. This man has been by Poirier's side for the majority of his career. A lot of you out there may not know him, doesn't usually do interviews or media in really any aspect. So him coming on to share some memories, some moments, the origin story with Dustin Poirier is great to do on this farewell fight week. And I think you will all enjoy that very much. A different side of perspective that you don't really get to hear as much about Dustin talking to his teammates or his coaches or Dustin himself. And then on the back end of the show, one of the men who will be on the call for UFC 318 on Saturday, Daniel Cormier, on color commentary with Paul Felder, not Joe Rogan, and John Anik for this event, going back to his home state. Had to get DC on to give some thoughts on UFC 318, Poirier's retirement, Holloway. He knows both these guys very well and has known them back for a very long time. So what a great treat to have DC here en route to his practice and chat a little bit about UFC 318 before we both head out there to Louisiana. So could not have asked for a better show here as we kick off UFC 318 Fight Week. Great insight, great analysis, and just great conversation. So enjoy, sit back, relax, give a like, subscription, thumbs up, comment, anything you can do to support the show. It means a lot. I will take a quick break and be right back with Rob Rivetta. Back here on the Bonfire Podcast, continuing our UFC 318 preview with Robert Rivetta, who's a longtime associate, friend, manager of Dustin Poirier. Robert, I always hear Dustin mention your name when he's talking about the people important in his life, to his career, all those type of things. How are you just on this week, first of all? What are the feelings as we get things started here for UFC 318?
Pretty good. Pretty excited. Kind of a good, I should say, great ending to a, you know, wonderful career, and everything's come full circle, and it's exciting, man. It's really kind of a special to be part of, you know, his serendipitous journey, and, you know, to see where he started to where he's at to where he's ending. And I shouldn't say this is the ending. He's going to go on to other things, but to have a fight career wind down like this is pretty special.
Yeah, we spent like 4 or 5 days with Dustin right at the beginning of camp in late April, and kind of shot this special feature that's going to be dropping this week about the retirement. And he was saying, like, you know, praise to you, as I said off the top. It's one of the important people. I think he said you hooked up after like his second or third pro fight. Could you tell me the origin story there? How did you meet Dustin Poirier?
Yeah, it's actually kind of a funny story. So I met Dustin through Tim Credor, who I was managing at the time, Crazy Tim. And what happened was I was actually managing, this goes way back, was Junie Browning.
Wow, a Junie Browning reference on this podcast. Yeah, I've been waiting.
Yeah, so it's been a minute. But he was just coming off a UFC stint, and a local promoter from Louisiana who was actually featured in Fightville. I forget the guy's name. Gil of the Thrill, that's who it was. Gil of the Thrill called me and he said, hey, I've got this local guy. I want to essentially, I want to teach him a lesson. He's got a big ego, and I think he was setting me up. I don't think he was being sincere, but he said, the guy's got a big ego and he's been beating up all the local guys, and I want to teach him a lesson. So can you give us Junie Browning? And I was like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Let me watch some tape of this guy. And watched a couple of videos. And I'm like, yeah, this guy doesn't seem kind of like what they're dressing him up. So I called Tim, who's one of the few guys I knew over there. And I said, hey, Tim, there's this guy that's being pitched and his name's Dustin Poirier. He's kind of having a hard time pronouncing it. And he said, man, that guy's my guy. And he's going to kick the shit out of Junie Browning. Like, you know, that's a terrible fight. Like, you know, I don't know what you're hearing. And so anyways, that never materialized. And then, you know, after that, I talked to Tim. I said, hey, what's going on with that guy? And he's like, well, he could actually use some management. And so that's how we linked up.
Fascinating. That's amazing. I've had a friend tell me I need to get Junie Browning on this podcast just to see where he's at these days. I was not expecting him to be name dropped today, but I love that. And then I guess like from that point on, what was the working relationship? He also mentioned and gave you credit for him getting signed to WEC.
Yeah. So another funny story. So I was in Edmonton, I believe it was Edmonton, Canada. Yep. We'd have to go back and tie these dates together, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And I was actually, I believe I was sitting down with Sean Shelby somewhere and a fight dropped out for, I'm sorry. We had sent him up to Canada on a whim. To fight this guy named Sex Machine or Sex Panther. I can't remember what it, I think it was Sex Machine was his nickname. And and I've been pitching him to Sean Shelby, like, hey, this guy's pretty good, blah, blah, blah. And then that weekend, I'm like, hey, I ran to Sean Shelby. I said, hey, he just knocked out the Sex Panther. And he's like, Sex Panther. And he kind of laughed. And he's like, what are you talking about? And then he's like, oh, the Sex Machine. He's like, that guy, I was going to sign him. He just knocked him out. I said, yeah. And so from that point forward, then he signed him because I think he was originally going to sign that guy, and he got a kind of a chuckle out of that I was calling him the Sex Panther when his nickname was the Sex Machine, which I'm still not sure why he'd have that nickname, but that's how he got signed.
I love that. And, I guess, like, what did you identify in him at the time? Because it sounds like maybe you only worked with a handful of people. Why did you feel like he was someone you meshed well with and could kind of work
Dustin?
With? Yeah.
No, I was actually working with a lot of people at that time. Okay. That was kind of actually my peak. So I was working with a ton of UFC guys and a ton of WC guys. And, it was pretty clear to see his grit, his toughness. I talked to him a couple of times. Couldn't have been any more sincere. Super nice. And then Tim spoke the world of him and said, this guy's going to be a superstar. You're crazy if you don't pick him up. So.
Wow. Yeah.
Pretty easy choice.
Yeah, no kidding. And I mean, could you, I know we're skipping many steps here, but could you even fathom that it would have led to this, that he would have had the career that he had and compete in the defining fights that he had?
No, honestly not. We talk about it. We joke about it now. We were actually just talking about it last week. And, you know, our conversations 15 years ago started, you know, with the what ifs, the whens, you know, wouldn't that be pretty cool if that happened. Wow. You know, if we could do that, that would be mind blowing. And I'll tell you what we set out the goals and what we talked about and the vision is here and reality is now here. So reality, I think the only thing we did was we shot too low. Yeah. You know, in essence, in hindsight, it's easy to say now, but ultimately the goals that we set out, we were thinking too small for a while because he's a much bigger superstar than, you know, I think we could have envisioned at the time.
How did the UFC debut come together when he ended up stepping in for Jose Aldo and fighting Josh Grispy on UFC 125? Obviously, that was a late replacement. I'm sure Josh, I don't know, maybe wanted to wait for his title shot. I don't know. How did all that go down?
So that was, there was a lot there. So if you remember, he was fighting at 155. He had never fought at 145. And that fight fell apart. And I called Tim, I believe, and I said, hey, do you think he could make 145? He's like, I don't know. And of course, we called Dustin. And Dustin's like, yeah, I'll do whatever it takes. Like, I can do it. And I think there was only 6 or 7 weeks. I don't remember what the exact timeline was, but there wasn't that much time, especially to try out a 145 cut. But I mean, the guy is pretty relentless, and he did it. And then he fought and he beat up Crispy, and kind of the rest is history. But that was a pretty exciting fight.
Yeah, it was very exciting. We were actually just watching back like some of the tape, and you could see Joe Rogan on commentary. Like, he identified Dustin as like, I'm really impressed with this kid right off the bat. And obviously, you see all these years later, sucks Joe won't be calling the final fight on Saturday. I just reported that it'll be Paul Felder, Daniel Cormier, and John Anik. But man, like, you see that hype back then. And like you said, that just kind of took it off. Was there any debates after that of like, ooh, that 145 cut wasn't fun, let's not do that again? Or because you got the win over the number one contender, it's like, we got to ride this until the wheels fall off?
Listen, he's pretty strong-headed. There's not much I can say or you can say or anybody else can say when he's locked in on something and he's dead set, he's going to walk through walls in order to get it done. And 145 is no different. And you know, he obviously had a lot of success in that early fight, and he kept that thing going. And it wasn't until, I believe, the Connor fight when he actually considered moving up. And it was, you know, due to the circumstances and the results of that fight. And then also, too, he had been – those cuts that he had been doing were nuts. Mm-hmm. Nuts. I think, you know, he was a heavy guy. So,
yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, it was a good
It was a good move.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the better weight class changes we've ever seen in UFC history, given all the results he had. Can you take us back to that first Conor fight? I mean, he's very open about it. He was not mature enough, mentally strong enough to handle that moment. Obviously, it taught him so much in his career for the later points. But do you recall that week and being like, ooh, the way Dustin's behaving, like, this might not turn out well for us?
You know, I never think that. Sure. But, you know, I do remember he was kind of there was a point in time where he was just walking forward and knocking guys out. I mean, if you remember and kind of with like a chip on his shoulder, there was some anger there that he just wanted to knock guys out. And he was moving forward and doing that. There was I forget the Brazilian's name that got in a bunch of trouble. He also knocked out man, I'm drawing blanks on all the names. We kind of had a rivalry.
I'm the record right now. I'll pull them up for you. Some of the are you talking WEC here or
WEC? No, it might have been. So no, it was. I think it was all UFC.
Yeah, because he WEC wins. Zach McElwright, Josh Crispy. Then he went to Jason Young, Pablo Garza, Max Holloway, Jonathan Brookins, Eric Koch, Diego Brandao, maybe.
There it is. So those last three names you just mentioned, those were all finishes, right? Mm-hmm. Koch, Brandao, and who was before that?
Koch was actually a decision. Brandao was a first-round knockout. Akira Korsani was the second-round knockout.
There's the other one. And he knocked him out too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so those guys, he was just walking forward and knocking them out. And, you know, with Connor, obviously there was a lot of emotion and a lot of head games. And Dustin was a little bit offended, I would say, because the guy was new on the scene and, you know, kind of wanted the world and was being very explicit about it. I don't think Dustin appreciated that. So I think Dustin wanted to teach him a lesson. And so, you know, he did that in fight 2 and 3.
Yeah.
So the lessons were stiff. So, but unfortunately that one didn't go his way. But you know, after that, I think he took a step back and there was a lot of maturing and he obviously moved up weight classes and man, he is who he is today. I don't think we need to talk about that.
Yeah, the results really, you know, kicked off there. Lightweight knockout of Diego Ferreira, knockout of Yancy Medeiros, the win over Joe Duffy, where he had to fight through all sorts of adversity with his messed up nose, and then Bobby Green, and the setback against Michael Johnson. I feel like that one is kind of an interesting one, too. Like, he obviously overcame it, and I think it was in that stretch, like 9-1 with one no contest, and that was the only loss. Unexpected one, I think, for many at the time. What do you recall from the aftermath of that fight and how he picked up the pieces as a lightweight?
Which fight is that?
Michael Johnson.
Oh, so that one, yeah, that was another, gosh, interesting one. Yes, similar, but obviously, I don't know if he'd call that a fluke. I don't know if he'd call, you know, I'm not sure how we classify that one.
An anomaly.
Yes, and he got a lot tighter with his boxing on that one, you know, after that fact. I would say the one that I felt like he probably had, you know, kind of a hockey stick growth was after Joe Duffy.
Yeah.
Joe Duffy was a super tight one, technical, tough guy, super hyped. You know, it was after the Connor fight. Nobody had beat him, I don't think, up until that point. So that was a good turning point and a good growth ladder for him, more so than the Johnson fight, but I could be wrong. That's just my
perspective. I think that's great perspective. I mean, you look at what he followed that with. I mean, the first Eddie Alvarez fight was, you know, a bit weird with the fouls and stuff like that. But, man, mm-hmm. You're listening to everyone talk now about Ilia Topuria, like some of the greatest three-fight winning streaks. He beat Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez, and Max Holloway all in a row. And Max Holloway was the champion on a 13-fight winning streak at the time.
And Pettis in there too, right?
Yeah, Pettis was right before. Yeah. He was after the Alvarez fight. So, yeah, that's, I mean.
That was killer row. That was when he went on like the murderer's row and just, you know, iced all of them. So that was an exciting time.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, the second Holloway fight at UFC 236 is where he got his interim belt, and that set up the fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov. And it's so interesting. Like, of course, hindsight is 2020 and all that. But I remember him telling me that night he beat Max Holloway in Atlanta. He's like, I would have beat anyone that night. Like, never felt so good. Night. Didn't matter. And then like the Khabib one, maybe a little bit of the opposite. Don't want to, you know, share too many details about the behind the scenes stuff, but like just goes to show. But what do you remember about Abu Dhabi and that title fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov?
Abu Dhabi was a tricky one. You know, obviously we were kind of going into the lion's den. I think everything was tilted in his favor. It was insane. Super hot, you know, the flight over there, the travel, and he had some moments of brilliance in there. I, you know, there were seconds where I thought, man, he's going to pull this off. And, I don't know that I'm not sure that he did anything wrong. I just think he ran into one of the greatest lightweights of all time, you know, and a guy that nobody ever cracked the riddle. So no shame in that. The guy was just really, really good. And again, everything was set up for him. It wasn't a great night to be on the other side of that cage for him, the way that whole thing was set up, including the royal family behind him. It was wild. I was in the corner that one, and I remember looking across the cage, and one of the little kids was, you know, doing this stuff to us and like, you know, some like wild stuff. And obviously it's like, we, you know, there's not much you could say, or cause it was all set up for him, and you saw them all cheering for him, and you're like, man, they've got like the royal family behind him. Like that's wild. But I thought it was a good fight overall.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if one of those kids was the one who came into the cage after and asked, like,
I think it was
hurt or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was the same kid. And I think Dustin said, I'm hurt.
Yeah. Right here in my heart. Yeah. Which again, I mean, like that shows the type of guy he is, how gracious in defeat, all that type of stuff. Then after that, like COVID comes up pretty quickly. I think he was supposed to fight Dan Hooker originally in like San Diego or something. And then it goes to the Apex. One of many fights of Dustin Poirier's that should and probably will be in the UFC Hall of Fame fight wing one day. That one.
I did not like that one at all.
Yeah.
There's zero I liked about that one.
Go on. Why? Just the brutality of it, or was there more?
Yeah. I even told him I didn't like that one. It was a lot of wear and tear, and he went in there buck wild. I mean, he went in there to prove a point. He was coming off a loss, and he did just that. You know, it was impressive to see as a fan, and everybody loved it. And then also too, it was a raw, I've never heard cracks like that, you know, in a fight. And when we did COVID, right, everything became super real in that Apex, right? You could hear him breathing. You could hear the shots. You could hear him gasping. And it was just too raw for me. I was like, so watching somebody love doing that, it wasn't great. I didn't love it.
Yeah, it was. It's an all-time fight though, and one that'll stand out.
He loved it.
Yeah, exactly. And that is says it all about Dustin Poirier. Yeah. He relishes this stuff. And then you move on a few months later. Do you recall when they called saying Abu Dhabi Conor McGregor rematch is finally here, we want to do this, and what the discussion was like after you received that phone call?
You know, there was a lot of lot that led into that one. A lot of like, I'd been talking to Adi Attar way before we got the call. So I kind of knew the call was coming in, but he had kind of given me a heads up of like, hey, we've got a list of guys and I think we want, you know, we want to do this. And so I was like, phenomenal. Yeah, well, we're definitely in on that. So a lot of buildup to that. And then obviously we went down there and fought. It was during COVID. They locked us down for a couple weeks or 10 days, whatever it was, which is, again, kind of a weird dynamic.
Right, the racetracks too. Out
there. Yeah. They were buzzing all. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. So that didn't seem to bother him. You know, it was just, that was, I would say that was the most special fight in his career and my favorite, if you want my perspective, in terms of the mental mountain that he had to climb and the hurdle that you have to come to get back one like that against a guy that, you know, has been talking shit to you for years and talk shit to you, you know, back then and still doing it now and has kind of moved up like that. And again, kind of felt the same way with the Khabib one, not quite as much, but he pulled up on a yacht and, you know, I don't know that they applied the same rules to him as they did us. And it just felt a little one-sided, but I don't, you know, in that fight, I don't think he gave a shit. I think he was going in there to win.
Yeah, that seemed like when there was a real turning point for him, like mentally, especially. He had to, I guess, overcome those demons from the first fight, and he just channeled it so well. And it was weird, too, because Conor was being very nice. It was a complete change from fight one, obviously.
Yeah, he took a different approach. Obviously, the results didn't sway it either way, but he took a much different approach. But it was still, it was a mental mind game. It was to see him do that was special, for sure. Yeah.
And I guess to go like a little more behind the scenes on that fight, I know you said you and Adi had discussed beforehand, but like when the UFC element gets involved, I know this was a fight where Dustin and you had to bet on yourselves, right? Like I don't think you got the financial perks, the pay-per-view points, all that for fight two, but you knew if you won, there would be a fight three and all those things would come. So I guess what's that like, both from your perspective, like maybe not getting everything you want, but knowing I'm betting on my guy, we're betting on ourselves and the upside here could be immense.
Yeah, it certainly felt like the bet was against us, meaning I think they had looked at him as a stepping stone and to far greater plans. At least that's the way I looked at it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the negotiations were tricky. And he definitely bet on himself. And then obviously the backside of that materialized greater than we could imagine. So it all worked out. But man, it didn't feel like it was far different going into it than you would imagine, right? When everybody probably looking from the outside in, it's always like, oh, there's a shot, you know, he's going to fight the biggest superstar. He's going to have a windfall of money and, you know, and his life's going to change forever. Well, I can tell you the economics don't look like that. And it's not like that, you know, for that particular fight. I think it's more like, hey, prove yourself. And once you do, then you can have the backside of everything you've ever wanted. But until you do that, which is not an easy mountain to climb.
it was a bit of a, I would say, a weird situation. But after that, right, there was a decision to make, or maybe there wasn't. There was that whole thing, at least in the media and the public, like, you know, Khabib finally retires. Is he going to fight Charles Oliveira, I think, in Texas for that vacant belt, or go right into the trilogy? Dana White always says, like, he can have his cake and eat it too in this scenario, basically. And that's what happened. But was there any moments in between the second and third Conor fight where a different direction was seriously considered, or was it always, we won this fight, we're fighting however many months later in part three?
You mean in terms of like either A, fight for the belt, or B,
fight Charles for that, Charles Oliveira? I think Michael Chandler ended up getting the fight, or just do the trilogy right away.
You know, and to Dustin's credit, because Dustin's right a lot, and there's been a couple things where I'm like, man, you're 100% right. But he was saying, this is probably something a lot of people don't know, he was saying leading up to this fight, like, because they were stalling the Khabib retirement. And he was saying, he's going to retire. This fight should be for the belt. Like, yeah. This is
Fight 2 should have been the belt. I kept saying that. The Abu Dhabi one, the UFC just wouldn't let go. I put a tweet out there saying that a few months ago. I got like 10,000 likes. Everyone agreed. He got screwed out of that situation. I mean, he should have been the undisputed lightweight champion, but sorry, I interrupted. Go on.
So he was kind of saying that leading up to the fight, and I wasn't paying too much attention to it because I'm like, hey, let's just focus on this. But he was like, no, this should be for the belt. And looking back, he's right, because it wasn't more than a few months later they made the announcement, and then they did give him the choice. Hey, would you like to A, fight for the belt, or would you be like this? And obviously this was a lot more lucrative, and I felt like there was a lot more to gain. And then obviously with a win, he could move on to get this anyway. So it was, I think it was a pretty easy choice, which he made, and it worked out. And then he did fight for the belt shortly thereafter. He thought it should have been for the belt, and he was saying that before the fight, and he was right.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think one of the bigger injustices, but this is how it goes. You just saw similar things with John Jones at heavyweight, where I thought it was pretty clear he was done, and they kind of tried to drag it out. So they do this sometimes, unfortunately, when they want guys to stay. But when that fight 3 ended, I mean, the broken leg, all the chaos in the ring or the octagon afterwards, what do you recall from, I guess, the night afterwards when the third Conor McGregor fight happened?
Dude, that was a weird outcome, and I was, unbeknownst to the fact, it kind of dawned on me when we were walking out of the cage and back to the dressing room that a bunch of people were yelling at us, like, you know, you didn't win that fight. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I had a whole different perspective. I'm like, I think this thing's over, and a couple guys yelling, and then when we got back, it was like a lot of people were like, yeah, he didn't win that fight. And I'm like, what are they talking about? So it took me like a week to figure out that like a lot of people thought that it was unclear and that he didn't win and that somehow he wasn't going to win. I saw a whole different perspective than I think some of the general public thought. So, but we thought it was clear as day, and I thought he would have beat him either way. And I thought he was starting to win, and it was starting to go later in the rounds anyways, which would have favored Dustin. So yeah, that was a weird ending, because it kind of left this gray area that I wasn't aware of. And then once I made aware, I'm like, oh, I guess people don't think that he won.
Well, it's a W on the resume, and I think the check cleared like it was a win, right? So you guys
I mean, listen, history writes its own story, and obviously look where Dustin's gone and where he's gone, and the outcome's clear.
Definitely. No part 4 needed, I don't think. So
no.
We move on. And then the following years, I mean, the Charles title fight, I know he was devastated after that one. And I don't know. I remember the night where he was like, lost that fight. We're in the big tent they have out there outside of the T-Mobile, and I think Dana was finishing his press conference, and Dustin was in the back with his whole team, and he was kind of gave me a hug, and he had some tears in his eyes. And I don't know, like, part of me thought maybe that was going to be it right then. Like, he's saying, I don't know if I want to try to get back into it. Do you remember like the aftermath of that, and him being maybe making some decisions, and then he takes 11 months off before he comes back and fights Michael Chandler at Madison Square Garden?
You talking about the Oliveira?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I ever questioned him coming back. I thought he'd come back, for sure. I know the one he really wanted, and probably still is like the one that kind of the unicorn that got away from him, is Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
He really wanted that fight after that fight. I mean, that was the one he was bullseyed on, and it never came together. But I don't know. I don't know if I ever not thought he wasn't going to come back. I always thought he was going to come back.
Yeah, maybe.
That never crossed my mind.
Yeah, and just do a few more. He beats Chandler. The Gaethje rematch, obviously, for that BMF belt was a tough one that I think many of us saw it ending like that. We were expecting like a crazy war, but just shows the sport. And then he takes on the young killer, Benoit Saint-Denis, and makes a statement there, and then gets that third title shot against Islam, which, you know, obviously he got the win. He's got the name, but great timing too, how that came together. I think Islam did the interview with me where he called out Dustin and said, I want to fight like this state. And then we were off to the races, but that was not an easy camp. I know he had some rib injuries and things like that, but he had to go for it for the third title shot, right? I know he said like Joe Lee wanted him to pull out of that fight. What was your opinion knowing where he was at going into the Islam fight?
Again, another mental mountain that I don't know too many people on this planet could climb but him. He was really injured. like scale of 1 to 10, probably like a 9.
Yes.
He had and the biggest debilitating injury that you'd not want facing a wrestler, and not just a wrestler, but, you know, maybe one of the best wrestlers in the world. So for him to have that in his head and know that, you know, he had that handicap and still go in there, take the fight, do what he did, and then fight the way he did is knowing what we know on the back end and then seeing what he did that night is beyond special.
Seriously, one of the best fights of 2024. It was unbelievable. And yeah, I mean, like that, if he wanted to go out with that, knowing that he wasn't 100%, like, I don't think anyone would have blamed him. It would have been an incredible moment. But how did we get from there last June in your mind to Saturday night? Like, what discussions did he have with you about either stopping after Islam, doing one more? How did this all happen?
Islam kind of came together in a serendipitous way, because obviously he beat Saint Denis and there was no, I don't even think there was a thought of a title, but it just kind of came together. There was no opponents there. He'd come off such a spectacular performance. So that kind of just fell into place. I don't think there was anything planned. It came quickly, meaning like we knew like at weigh-ins, I think somebody was telling him, hey, with a win, you're going to fight for the belt.
Yeah, I think it was Ali Abdelaziz.
I think he kind of went and threw that to him. So he was already hearing that. So there was already whisper. So and then obviously he had the fight he did. And then within 24 hours, it was already like, hey, if an opponent doesn't step up, like, you're the guy. And I think it was 90 days later, a short time later, he was fighting for the belt. Wasn't much time. Wasn't much to think about. Wasn't much to plan for. It was, you know, kind of just a straight mission. So that was really cool. And then I guess prior to that, taking you back, I think he had kind of been thinking about retirement, but I don't know that he had a dead set. I think he was kind of, I think he was figuring it out, is my guess. He can answer that better than that, but I think he was kind of teetering on it. And then obviously the belt came up, he fought for that. And then after that, obviously, he had more time to really think about it. Now he's got a kid on the way, a baby boy, which is pretty special. And, man, I don't know. I don't know what else he has to give. I think he's kind of stamped his legacy and he's done so much. I don't know what else he would have.
Yeah, I agree. So when did you first catch wind of, you know, there's going to be one more fight. I want to do one more fight. And then it could actually be in New Orleans, in Louisiana.
Again, this is where Dustin's right again. You got to give him a lot of credit because he kind of he put the wheels in motion of Louisiana. And he kind of said last year, he said, hey, I'd like to see if we can do this in my hometown, Lafayette. And we're like, you know, the logistics of that and the finances and from stadium to population to pull. And then obviously he's not, you know, I didn't foresee him going back down to a fight night or, you know, something like that. So he kind of said, hey, I want to do it in my hometown and I want to make it my last fight. And he kind of put that out there far before it was ever came into reality. And that's what we got. Obviously he didn't get Lafayette, but he got New Orleans, which is the next best thing. He got to do it on his timeline. The UFC was very gracious in setting this all up. I actually was telling somebody the other day, I don't know what other fighter has been able to retire, you know, in their hometown on kind of the date of their choosing, you know, and against an awesome opponent, you know, and then also for a belt. So just, I don't know what else you could ask for. It's pretty special.
Yeah, it's a very dream, unique scenario. I can't really think of anyone, especially like, you know, people maybe fight in their hometowns, then retire after, but like not where it's so predetermined as it has been here. When I spoke to him, like right when the fight was announced, he told me his preferences were Justin Gaethje, or, you know, he even threw a flyer out about Ilya Topuria, but they obviously had other plans for him. But he's happy with Max. They have their history. But what did you think about the, I guess, timeline or like how we got to Max Holloway and doing this trilogy for the BMF belt?
Love everything about it. I don't know, zero complaints. He's in a great space, in terms of mentally, physically. He's actually in his home. He's in his home right now with his team. They flew in a couple days ago. They're just hanging out, and then he'll drive into Louisiana, or I'm sorry, into New Orleans tomorrow, I believe, or Wednesday, and they'll stay in Airbnb. But he's in his bed right now, in his house, with his, you know, family doing his thing. So it's pretty awesome, pretty special. I don't know. Again, I'm not sure what else you could ask for.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome the UFC is doing this.
Yeah, it's very awesome. And yeah, two of the most beloved guys of the sport. I mean, these two put on an absolute war last time. It seems like they want it this time too. They want like five rounds of blood and all that stuff. So it's might get another classic here. What are you expecting the fight night energy to be like? Like Dustin told me, I think Lil Wayne is actually like rapping him out or singing him out or whatever. I don't know what song they're going to do and all that stuff, but that's going to be pretty cool. We haven't seen that since McGregor Mendez. So right. They're pulling out all the stops here. What do you think the energy is going to be like on Saturday?
Insane. I don't know how you take like one of the biggest rappers of all time that happens to be from there. You take obviously the biggest fighter of all time from that region, put them together in one night in, you know, pretty awesome city. I don't know how you screw that up.
Yeah.
And then you put two guys that are dynamite, you know, and put them together in a cage. I think it's going to be pretty special.
For sure. Yeah. Very special. I guess just before I let you go here, Robin, I really appreciate all the time. Like what would be something about Dustin? He's lived his life very openly and shared his story for better or worse, all that stuff. But, you know, we've seen this out front of us for like 15 years now, but you've seen him more intimately behind the scenes. What's something that maybe people don't know as well about Dustin, or maybe they have the wrong perspective or interpretation on about this man?
Do you know what? He's pretty candid. He's an open book. Sometimes I'm like, you shouldn't have said that. I don't think he gives a shit what I say. He does his own thing, and he's very candid. And, you know, he kind of speaks from his heart. And a lot of the zingers that he says and some of the things that, like, even I'm like, where did you get that? You know, like 25 minutes to make life fair.
Yeah.
You know, he's got some other zingers that he's put out there. And I'm just like, man, that's pretty. The other one. There's a time to be grateful and there's a time to be, I can't remember what he put together, but so he speaks from the heart. Who you see up there is who you have in real life. And he doesn't hide anything. And he's grown into, you know, an amazing person. He's lifts his community. He helps everybody around him. He's still got the same people around him, much, you know, hasn't changed. He's got an amazing wife, amazing family, an amazing support staff, and he's just a really good guy. And I don't think all the circumstances that have played out is by luck. I think he's earned them all, and he's been really good to others, and obviously everything's been really good to him. So yeah, he's just a great guy. I don't know. Obviously I know him personally, but what you guys see is what I see. There's no variance in between behind the scenes, and, you know, he doesn't turn it on or change who he is or, you know, and then he's pretty authentic, you know, in terms of what he's always wanted, and he's always wanted a legacy. He's always wanted to be number one, and that's what he got.
Yeah. And it also must be noted, like, outside the cage controversies, none, like, always been a good ambassador and good person for the sport. You know, it seems like for the most part, minus like, you know, a few hiccups in 15-year relationship, it's been good with the UFC and all those type of things. So kind of the model career there. I know if we could sit here today and ask him, and we alluded to it earlier, it should have happened. That undisputed title evaded him in his career. I know how bad he wanted it. In my opinion, you know, going to go down as one of the greatest fighters to ever step in that octagon to not touch that. But someone asks you going forward, regardless of what happens on Saturday, what is Dustin's legacy that he'll be leaving in mixed martial arts?
You know, it's funny, to sum it all up for you, and I told the UFC this years ago, but when they do their summits and they tell a story of like, hey, this is how you're going to come into the league. This is how you got to model yourself. And this is what you got to do if you want to see all the success and you want to see all the riches and all the glory, you should take this path, right? And that path is Dustin Poirier, right? Like, they should show kind of, because with the way he came in, the economic model that he came into when he started was very, very low in the WC.
Yeah.
And to where he's gotten to in terms of finances, and he is the UFC dream. Dustin Poirier is the UFC dream. So when you're pitching a young guy and you're like, hey, you want everything that he has, you got to go through those same steps. Like, go through the steps Dustin Poirier did and go through the fire And if you're lucky enough, then if you're steadfast enough, and if you have enough mental willpower to, you know, climb the mountains he did, then you will get everything you want, but not until you do that.
Yeah. And I know for you managers, like, you know, your focus is him and making sure, you know, everything is going on his side. But if you could, I guess, take a step back on your own self, like knowing where you found this guy, what you brought him to, all the things we just said about his character and, you know, the money he's made and stuff like that. Do you personally feel like with him, you did your job? Like, this is something that you kind of said, like, this is what you've given your athlete everything they would hope for, right? Including seemingly living with his health intact.
I think I've just been a small part of what he does. He gets all the credit. And he, you know, he's the one that's had to go in there and do everything. And I've gotten a lot of help. I've got some guys that helped me with the contracts and whatnot today. And so, yeah, I think I'm this much and he's that much. All the credit goes to him. You know, nobody gets in there and fights the fights. He does that. Nobody gets through those mental hurdles. He does. So yeah, I mean, we've had a good run, but all the credit goes to him.
Definitely said like a true and skilled manager there, Rob. So I appreciate the insight and all this. I appreciate you being here. This has been awesome to hear some of these stories about you and Dustin as we go into UFC 318. I'm going to take a quick break, Rob, and I'll be right back on the other side with Daniel Cormier to talk more about Max Holloway and Dustin Poirier. As we talk about all throughout today's program of The Bonfire, UFC 318 is Saturday at Smoothie King Center in New Orleans. The retirement fight of Dustin Poirier as he faces Max Holloway for the third and final time in his backyard, his home state of Louisiana. And for the diamond, he is trying to walk away on a high against a familiar foe in Max Holloway. Their third meeting, Poirier now 2-0. And both guys, as they've told me in the lead up to this fight, they want war. They want to be a couple knuckleheads in there and they want to bleed. But how is it going to turn out? If you feel confident, put your money where your mouth is with mybookie.ag. You can bet your way. There's money lines, methods, rounds, knockout props, and much more over there on MyBookie. And if you're new the site, you can use the promo code BON. You can become a first-time depositor and you can get a welcome bonus of up to $2,000. You want to bet $100, they'll let you play with $150. You want to bet $1,000, they'll give you $1,500. Use the promo code BON. While Poirier is calling it a career on Saturday, the action is just getting started with MyBookie. So do all your 318 wagering with MyBookie and the fight just always hits different. Joining me now, once again on The Bonfire, is the man who will be calling UFC 318 this weekend, Daniel Cormier. How are we doing, DC?
I'm good, Mike. Trying to drive out to my gym right now. I was, and yesterday, me and my kids drove out on the highway with the top off of his Jeep, and now I can't figure out the sun. It's like a nightmare. I'm about to be at my gym here in a second, though.
Yeah, that's you're so busy, man. Straight from Nashville doing your thing. And then when do you go to Louisiana? Like next couple of days, you go in early to spend time at home. How are you doing this week?
What'd you say, Mike?
Just how are you setting up this week? You were just in Nashville. You're at home with the kids. Now you're going back to Louisiana.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to Louisiana first and foremost. That's what's important. You get to go down to the home state, to the bayou. It don't matter what I got to do to get there. It's beautiful, man. I can't wait. I head back down there on Tuesday night. I got fighter interviews Wednesday. I'm going to talk to Dustin. I'm going to talk to Max for my DC check-ins. Then we have fighter meetings on Thursday. Friday, we have the weigh-in show. And then Saturday, we got the fight. I mean, it's a big week, man. I'm excited. I'm very excited about this one.
Yeah, and I just reported that Paul Felder will be calling the fights with you and John Anik instead of Joe Rogan. So I think this means, Daniel, you're getting the in-cage interview duties. Are you ready for the emotional Dustin Poirier retirement interview, win or lose?
I'm ready for it. It's one that I hate that we're having to do, right? Because Dustin's been so important to mixed martial arts. But everybody has their time, right? Like, I'm lucky enough to be able to be there when it happens and be like right next to the octagon or inside the octagon. I had to do some pretty emotional ones before in my career, but I think this one will probably be the hardest because I met Dustin way back after I beat Jeff Munson in 2011 in Dallas. I met him. I ran into him at a gym in Lafayette, and to see what he's become, it's outstanding, man. So. But everybody has their time, right? I'm just happy that Dustin understands when his number's been called and when it's time to walk away, that he can be comfortable with the decision he's making. And hell, he got the red carpet rolled out for him, right? He gets to fight back at home. Doesn't get no better than that.
Yeah, Lil Wayne, theatrical walkout. It sounds like he'll be rapping him out to the octagon or something. I don't know what song he's doing, but like the scenes are going to be crazy. What do you think like the crowd is going to be like for Dustin? Can we even fathom what this night will be like?
Dustin fought there in 2015 when I was supposed to fight Ryan Bader. But he wasn't there yet, right? He wasn't quite the star that he needed to be to truly feel what fighting in Louisiana would mean. He's going to feel that now. It's going to be absolute madness. I mean, the fact that this guy still lives home, born and raised there, represents Lafayette in the way that he does, it's special. I'm happy that, again, I didn't get that, right? I was supposed to fight Ryan Bader there. They were going to allow me to fight back at home. We just have not had enough guys that have warranted the UFC going back there. Guys that could carry the card. Obviously, I had that opportunity back in the day, and Dustin has that now. So it's a special thing for me also to be a part of it down in Louisiana.
Yeah, it seems like Dustin, you know, we don't see many guys retiring at this level of the sport, right? Fighting for a BMF title, main event of a pay-per-view, all that stuff, especially when it's like pre-planned. How do you just think his preparation could be like when you know it's the last time you're doing this and it's at such a high level, like you still got to be up there, but yeah, it's on the way out too.
Well, you look at these guys, and Lauren Murphy did it last week. It was, I'm retiring, but I want to go out on a victory. I'm not just here to take part in this, right? Dustin wants to win, and obviously he's beaten Max Holloway twice, right? So he's an opportunity to fight a guy that he's already had success against. But it ain't going to be easy. I mean, Max is as good as they come, and he's motivated to hold on to that BMF championship. You know, you got to make sure that you're locked in if you want to get a victory in those situations always. But it's even more being that Max knows that Dustin's done, right? Dustin's going to walk away from fighting. Max still has to be here. He wants to get a victory over Dustin as Dustin retires because he's still got to deal with everything that mixed martial arts entails.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. They're concluding this trilogy, obviously, right? But it's the longest spanning trilogy in UFC history, over 13 years between the first fight and the third fight, whereas like your trilogy with Stipe was over 3 years, one of the shorter ones. I'm sure a lot of what you could take away from each fight. How do these guys even factor in the previous fights, or can you not because they were so, so long ago?
No, I think they can look at what happened in the fights previous and take some of these stuff from it. But they also got so much on each of these guys, right? Look, Mike, this is my team of guys. See, I just walked into my gym. I'm training fighters now.
I love it.
I'm excited about that.
Coach DC.
Yeah, because that Ultimate Fighter kind of piqued that in me. But listen, they can take something from it. I just don't know that you can rely everything can't be on it. But yeah, of course, especially when they fought so long, right? Max was undefeated when he lost to Dustin the first time. Last time was for the interim championship. So there's a lot to these fights. Take something from it, but know that it's a completely different fight.
Yeah. What about the Max side? I mean, the return to lightweight, he's fully dedicated to it this time. Like, it's not anywhere in the back of his mind. He told me, take me out of the rankings at featherweight. They've now done that for this week's update. But he just coming off the knockout, first time of his career. Like, how do you gauge what this guy could be on Saturday, just given the weight class change, the miles, and then the knockout?
Well, if he's anything like we saw him last time at 155, he's one of the best in the world. I mean, there's a difference in Max Holloway this time. The first time he fought at 155, he even said, he goes, I had a spare tire. I was just gaining weight to fight. But then we saw him against, when we saw him against Justin, he did not look like that same guy. He looked like a 155 pounder. And I think that now his diet matches everything that he needs to be in order to become a world champ. Because that's exactly what his eyes are set on again. He's not thinking, go win this fight. You hear it in the stuff that he's saying about Ilya. That loss did not deter him. He still wants to get back in there with Topuria and try to make that right.
Yeah, what have you made of the comments he's had towards Topuria? Like he, you know, I think he said that one yesterday to CBS Sports, like kind of said his 3-fight winning streak was overrated given where each guy was, which is a fascinating thing when you're part of that. And then, you know, he made it very clear to me he thinks the right performance, he delivers a moment, maybe he could get a fight with Ilya again next.
With the history, I think that he's closer to getting that title fight. You know, all those things he said, you know, they're true because everything he stated was fact. Problem is, Ilya still did that, right? You know, you got to give him credit for what he did. That was amazing to watch someone do what he did over the course of those 3 fights. And we have to really tip our hat to the champion. But Max Holloway wants that fight again. I just need to see how long it'll be before he gets that opportunity.
Yeah, I guess right now the odds, DC, mybookie.com has them at a slight favorite for Holloway, -140, Poirier +110. Does that surprise you at all? Like, what's the case, I guess, given he's 0-2 against Dustin for him to be the favorite as we enter fight week here?
I just think they saw what happened the last time he fought at 155. I think they saw what he did to Justin Gaethje, and I think because of that, they're giving him respect and credit for it. I mean, and he should get that, right? He fought a tremendous fight in that fight. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. And what about Dustin? Do you feel 100% this is the farewell? Because you hear everyone, there's the little whispers like, oh, could he fight Ilya? Could he get a title shot again? And before you answer, DC, I asked Dustin this question. I'll play you his quick answer, and you can tell me what you think about what he says. The way you want to on July 19th. What's happening is like Jolie deleting Dana and Hunter's number off your phone. What if they call you and say, hey, like, I know you want Ilya before this.
I think I'm done, man. I'm done. This I'm putting everything in. I'm in the best shape of my life, having a good camp, super focused. You know, before I started a diet like 6 weeks before I showed up to training camp here in Florida. I completely quit drinking. Like 6 weeks before or 5 weeks before I showed up here, like I'm trying to do everything I can to be my best for my last one, honor this game, put on a show and go out there. And this is it for me, I believe.
Oh, I think he's done. It sounds like a man that's come to peace with what's happening. It sounds like a man that knows that his time has come, right? Number's been called. We all get a certain amount of time in fighting, right? Generally, the game does away with the athlete. It seemed like Dustin Poirier knows that his time's here, and he wants to make sure that he's done before the game is done with him. So I like that. I like hearing that from DP. I like hearing how sure he is that the career is probably over, and I like that. I like it. I like seeing a guy that recognizes that it's time, right? I know, because I was a guy that walked into my last fight knowing this shit, it was over. I was like, this shit is done. Like, I'm not doing this no more. And there's a freedom in that. There's a peace in knowing when the time comes.
Yeah. Do they, I mean, especially we saw that handwritten note from his daughter being like, daddy, I'm glad you're done fighting like that. I don't know how that gets you. Like that
gets you.
Yeah. So, I mean, this feels like no impact on the immediate title picture then. So who are we having Ilya Topuria fight next then, in your opinion?
Ilya should fight Armand Tsarukyan, but I think after watching that visual of Paddy Pimblett in the octagon, it'll be hard to erase that memory from the fans. The fans saw that. It's hard to think that they're going to forget what they saw, you know? So I bet Paddy Pimblett finds his way into a title fight.
Interesting. Yeah. And speaking of title fights, last thing before I let you go, because I know you got a class to teach here, DC. Derek Lewis had a great moment in Nashville. You were in the octagon for all that post-fight madness. I set it up to him before the fight. I was like, man, if John Jones retires, like Tom Aspinall is going to need people to fight. And you're a guy who's always present. Like, I don't think that's going to be next. I think it's going to be Tom and gone. But like one more, does Derek Lewis get another title fight before his career is over? What do you think?
Probably could, man. With the way the heavyweight division is right now, he might get an opportunity. Here's the thing. If all things were considered and you just need somebody to put on a show and a person that, that you know is going to bring the eyes, it's Derek Lewis. He really is going to bring more eyes than most in the division right now. Tom Aspinall needs challengers. So Chael told me that this morning on our show. He goes, if Ciryl Gane so much as coughs, Derek Lewis should get a title fight.
Yeah, if another Netflix movie pops up or something like
that. Yeah, they will not discourage him going.
What did you think of that stoppage? Do you think that was, there's a lot
of
talk?
I didn't think it was bad. I thought, well, when the guy grabs the fence to pull himself up, you got to do something. And you can't stop the action to reset the position because he's getting finished. I think he made the right decision. We're pretty hard on these officials a lot of times. But I thought that under those circumstances, he was left with no option.
Yeah, it was bizarre. You can't use the cage to stand up in the middle of a
finishing. No, you can't. It's impossible, especially when you get knocked out.
For sure. Okay, DC, last thing. I'm heading to New Orleans this week. Tell me, like, what's the one thing I got to do during this week while I'm there outside of UFC stuff?
Eat.
What? Where? Eat.
Gumbo, red beans and rice, jambalaya. Try it all, Mike. I will see you this week, and I will tell you some restaurants. I'll take you to a restaurant. Hey, right. I generally don't go to dinner, but this is a week where I'm taking everybody in the media. We're all going to dinner. I'm going to set up a dinner for all of us. All the guys like you, the guys that have been around the game for a while, my friends, we're going to go get a nice dinner.
All right. Well, if my excitement wasn't peaking, you just took it to another level, DC. I appreciate the time you being here back on the Bonfire Podcast. I will take a quick break and wrap things up.
You're the man, Mike.
And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast UFC 318 Fight Week Special. Let's go. Appreciate the time from Robert Vetta, Daniel Cormier. Can't wait for that dinner. What a treat. I will keep you all updated, see where DC takes us. We'll see if he follows through on that. But what a surprise and a treat that would be to get Cormier to take us to the legit locations, the main spots out there in New Orleans. So keep it locked to the social medias, things like that. Who knows what kind of content we might put on this channel as well through UFC 318 Fight Week. But again, as I said off the top and throughout the show, can't wait for this. It is going to be a huge night for our sport. Dustin Poirier, one of the true legends, an icon. I would not go think that's too far to call him that of our sport, and it is going to be a sad day when he walks away, and we will see if it is on a high or on an emotional low. Going to be there for it all. Appreciate everyone tuning in once again. Thanks to Rob, thanks to DC for joining the show, thanks to my man Kamikaze Abby Subban for producing as always. I'm staying an extra day in New Orleans, so not sure exactly when next week's podcast is going to come out. Going to try to do something interesting and unique. Don't want to make any promises here, but if things work out the way I want to, I think next week could be a pretty special show. Just not sure when it's going to be dropped, so not trying to tie myself to anything here, but see how it all shakes out, see how the week goes, and see what I can bring for you guys. Until then, I will see you back here next week on The Bonfire.